Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Welcome to the media show from the British Tech Network. I'm Russ Clewitt, and this is the show where we discuss all the media news from streaming movies and music to ebooks and TV shows. My co-host, fresh from his global warming lecture on Saturday, Mr. Carl Madden is here. How are you doing, mate?
Hi, Russ. I'm very well. Thank you very much, although that did send me to sleep the other day.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. But you got out of it in good time there, didn't you?
Well, yeah, but it's still part of my brain is still shut off.
You're still part of your mind is still watching that PowerPoint presentation,
which continuously went wrong as well. That was funny.
Oh, that's nice. Right, we're joined by two stars of the British Tech Network. First up from the photo show, Mr. Alex G. Fox. How the devil are you, sir?
I'm very well. It's just when you said the word two stars, I was thinking, and me. Don't forget about me. But apparently, you were being extra kind. Well, Russ.
Excellent. That's great. Busy week?
Not particularly. No, thanks.
Oh. All right. Well. I'm glad I could make it worse for you. And next up, we had him in for the first of our two unaired pilots, and he's come back for more. It's Tony Blunt. How are you doing, Tony?
Hello. Are you well?
I'm very well. Very well. This is my first time presenting a show, so there we go. Right, let's get straight into the week's stories. Now, we're all familiar with the festering pit of misery that is YouTube comments. Well, it looks like they're trying to fix it. It's been long considered as home to the worst commenters on the internet. Racist, cruel, idiotic, nonsensical, and barely literate is what Wired.com has to say about them. YouTube is in the process of upgrading its commenting system in order to better tame its most loathsome members. So, who here reads YouTube comments?
I'll tell you what, I used to. I used to in the day, but then as more and more people I knew posted more and more videos, and you just scroll down a little way and you see your first few of like fetid, disgusting nonsense that people are just, for some reason, I can't even understand what's the point of seeking out a video just to slag it off. It's a weird pastime, and the fact that you can do it in total like secrecy, so to speak, anonymity. I completely messed that word up, didn't I?
Anonymity.
There you go.
There's a world-renowned drummer who I'm quite a fan of. His name's Craig Blundell, and he recently did, excuse me, he recently did some videos for Premiere, who are a drum manufacturer, and generally the response was positive, but there was just one person who said, "Who is this guy? He's very average," and da 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 da. Well. What's the point? What's the point of insulting the guy? He's just put up a free video for you, and it was actually very good. But
it doesn't make much sense.
Alex Tone, do you read YouTube comments?
No, I write them, but only really offensive, racist, cruel, idiotic, and nonsensical ones.
So you're the one they target, yeah?
No, what I'd say is, I mean, yes, YouTube is particularly open to abuse, but. You know, don't think it's just YouTube that people get abused to. I mean, it has happened on this glorious network of ours. We have had some reviews that you sort of, you sit back and go, you know, it's fair enough you don't like it, but whoa, you know, don't question my parentage. You know, there's some very odd people out there that I don't know why they do it, but, you know, it's a psychological problem. And I think if you're going to open things up and they're going to be so popular, and there's no way of vetting the comments, you know, you've just got to, you know, take it with a pinch of salt. There's, you know, some really, really horrible things out there. But the thing is, the repercussions for people that aren't expecting it, that's where I object. You got some 16-year-old girl that, you know, puts up a plea that she needs help or something, and you get some seriously sick, I'll put a bleep in myself here, that, you know, they see it as a, let's see if we can push this poor person over the edge. I think YouTube actually owes the common listener, common viewer, they owe them some protection because of it's Wild West out there. And, you know, it's particularly bad on YouTube. So I think a reporting system, which is acted on incredibly quickly, a thumbs up, thumbs down system, if you like, on a comment. So,
well, they've got that.
And they do have reporting, but only really for spam rather than...
Yeah, but my point is, if something has got enough thumbs down, shall we say, then it should automatically be removed until it's investigated.
Well, if one comment is thumbed down enough, then it disappears. You can still see it, but it disappears.
Yeah, you can choose to show it as well, which is odd.
Yeah. Now, one obvious direction that YouTube could take is using something like G+ comments, because obviously YouTube is owned by Google. Would that entice you to the comments a bit more if people are actually commenting on videos and it leaves their name?
Do you reckon that's a real move, though, or just them trying to make G+ more popular?
Well, it would make it more popular, though, wouldn't it?
In all honesty, I don't see the point of allowing negative comments. What you could do, basically, is you could leave a positive comment, or you can just click a dislike button, and that be it.
Because
negative comments are actually pointless.
Most sane people will do. Yeah.
But negative comments do have a place. We're talking about offensive comments, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say something that's bad, fair enough, and, oh, I didn't like that, or that was a blatant copy of this, blout, and the other.
But if you leave the string of it, expletive, isn't it?
That's the thing.
You know, maybe it's me, but I don't actually agree. Okay. A terrible thing to say. I don't think...
Well, that's a negative comment.
No, so I'm saying, I don't think there's any point in allowing negative comments. Negative thumbs down is all you need.
Yeah.
Because the whole point is, it's if you put something up, unless you're charging for it, you're not putting yourself up for ridicule. And I firmly believe that. You can put yourself up for a thumbs up with a nice comment, a level thumb, if you like, meaning, I don't express a view if that's the way you want to do it. But if you want to put thumbs down, that is enough to register your disapproval. You do not need the ability to actually back that up with anything. And that would solve the whole thing overnight.
Yeah, because people don't know basically how to be constructive about the criticism. That's the problem.
Yeah, but just the fact that there is a negative response should be enough. Don't need anything else. Just know that X percent of people weren't that impressed. That's all you need to know. You don't need to know anything else.
Yeah.
Just as an addendum to that, if you're going to put a negative comment, it's got to be via someone that actually is signed up, has, you know, with a lot of sites, you have to have your
ID,
and it has to be approved, as in, yes, this is valid. So if you're going to do something negative, you can only put negative comments if you've got an ID. Otherwise, you can only put either non-positive or... Just positive comments, because that way it will stop them. If they've really got a point to make, then only allow them if they've got an approved ID. That will solve it overnight.
Okay. So the thumb going to the side of indifference for YouTube videos, then that'd be nice. You don't really care which way. Okay. Next up, I read a blog post on the Consumer Electronics blog. By someone, I'm not going to murder his name. We'll probably put a link to it in the show notes, that discussed the future of media, buyers or renters. Now, we all use Netflix and Spotify and Love Film and what's another one? RDO, apart from maybe Alex. So we're all getting much more comfortable these days with renting our media rather than actually owning it. So my question to you guys is, are you happy with all these new rental systems, or is there some stuff you really just prefer to own these days?
My own collection of DVDs I've always found over the years, I am quite happy to go and watch something through Netflix or whatever, but if there's something I really want to keep, then I will go and buy the DVD. There's certain TV shows or certain films I will keep in a DVD collection, but some I'm quite happy to just watch once and that's it.
You don't have a fear of losing stuff that will just go away then?
Not as such, no. I mean, that's one thing I thought might be a problem with Netflix, but it really hasn't been. One example I can think of, though, is on Live and also Spotify, where sometimes they will take down things because they've no longer got a license or they didn't have the license they thought they had. I mean, I've seen it with games on Live, you know. It's there in the Playpack bundle, which is one of the bundles there. And then suddenly, they'll take that out but put something newer in its place.
Yeah. Carl, you happy with renting stuff?
I love renting stuff. I love this new... I mean, I wasn't saying when it was Blockbusters and you went and rented something for £5.20 or whatever it was.
The dark days, as we like to call.
Yes, but now modern renting...
had to go outside.
Yeah. Digital renting, I'm all for it. When DVD first came over to these shores, I went out and bought a DVD player and I was buying something like 6-7 DVDs a week. Right, and they were about £20 a pop back then because I had the income then, which I still did. But there you go. Anyway, and recently... after doing up my room, the house a bit, I gave them all away. I gave them all to my dad. He's got a whole room full of my DVDs now. And I don't buy a single DVD anymore. All I do is get my stuff from Netflix, stream it from Love Film, listen to my music on Spotify, and occasionally I go to the cinema. And if what I want to see is not on any of them, I just don't see it. Simple as that.
Well, as far as films and TV goes, I'm happy to rent, you know, stuff from Netflix. I mean, you are renting. I mean, it's streaming. It's really rented. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to stream movies and TV shows. There are some TV shows that I like to keep. Like I've got all of Star Trek: The Next Generation, DS9. I've got every single series of Frasier, that kind of stuff. It's only those things that I like to add because it's a collection. It's just something. Something special. And as far as music goes, there are about three bands left that I will actually buy a physical CD, and that's it, because usually it will come with something a little bit extra, like a special edition DVD or something like that. So it's the only person who probably doesn't like to rent stuff. Alex.
All right, the grumpy old sod. Right, I see them both as two separate entities, to be honest. I mean, I buy stuff and I rent stuff, if you like, stream stuff. And they're two different things to me. Something is something like, for instance, I've just started watching Dexter and it's interesting. And I might enjoy the whole lot when I'm finally finished watching them. But I can't see it's something that I'd particularly want to own. There's a point in certain programs or films where I actually have a desire to have a physical... I can watch this on a desert island if I feel like. I actually want to own it. I want to be part of it, if you like. It's important enough to me to own it. And that it's like a Pandora's box sort of thing. I've got a shelf here where it's like, if you like, they're my A stuff. I have got boxes of stuff that I bought and I probably shouldn't have because I probably won't ever watch them again. But they're my A stuff. And, I have moments of going to this part of the room and looking and having a random choice because I know anything on there is going to make me feel good in some way or other. So to me, they're two separate entities. It's like you've got A stuff, which I want to own, and B stuff, which I'm quite happy. If they were on TV, I'd quite happily watch them. But the fact that they're streamed, it just means I can dictate when I watch them. So they're two different entities. I mean, and one doesn't actually ever leak into the other one.
One thing I've noticed, though, where I do buy DVDs lately, I think the last one I did was Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And that did have a lot of extra stuff on it as well. So that's that kind of an incentive to be buying rather than renting, I think. It's a good move if they do more of that.
Yeah, an interesting thing to say, though, is if you've got something you particularly like and you own the DVD, am I the only one that does this? If it comes on TV, I will watch it.
You'll still
watch
it.
Because it's on TV. Because it feels like an added bonus. It's almost like it's agreed with me. This thing is worth watching. And I will sit down at 7:30 to start watching it and not go to the loo till 9:30 because I don't want to miss it. I won't even pause it. It's got to be the full cinematic non-stop effect. And then I sort of sit there thinking, all I have to do is go on that shelf and put the DVD in and I can do what I want, but I won't. I like the idea of somebody else has got the same thought as me and they're putting it out.
with that, there's also people tweet along with the film, won't they, as well?
Yeah, it's
like a running commentary.
Maybe it's just something we'll get used to, and maybe I'm just holding on to something because it's what I used to do. But I really do feel there's something beautiful about owning a box and knowing it's yours. And any time, day or night, don't need an internet connection, don't need to worry about anything. Yeah. I stick it in and you can be personally absorbed by it.
Yeah. Mm. Well, it looks like me and Carl could be the reason then. that because of Netflix, if everyone got their BBC... fixed through Netflix, could it wipe out 80% of BBC Worldwide's revenues? This is what TechCrunch is what TechCrunch has written. The video on demand service Netflix has been a leading charge for consumers to watch more and more on demand video, while its TV with its service aggregating TV and film content from a number of media players, now attracting more than 25 million subscribers and bringing new audiences to the content. So if everybody's watching stuff through Netflix, what was the last BBC series or production you bought on a DVD or maybe even a VHS?
The thing is, this,
the thick of it.
Thick of it.
Yeah.
This report, this article, sorry, in the second paragraph you have one line that says it could wipe out 80% of the BBC worldwide revenues. To be clear, the BBC, which didn't invite media to the event, has denied this percentage. So where's it come from?
I've no. Well, it came from. It looks like it's come from a tweet.
Oh, because they're always so perfectly accurate. Those.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I mean, what they're saying? Things like Netflix and stuff is killing their model, but they're the ones licensing their stuff to Netflix. So
yeah, so they've got to be getting, you know, something from Netflix to license that out, haven't they?
Netflix hasn't turned up one day and go, we'll take this.
Yeah. Yeah, walked for the box. Of, yeah.
Mm. Well, I think the thing that's worrying people is that that people aren't buying the physical stuff, and that's still what BBC Worldwide is making the bulk of their revenue off, and because they haven't moved further into. But we've, you know, it's a digital distribution.
But we've known this for some time. Everyone in the media has known this for some time. Media sales are going down.
Yeah, we have known it for quite some time. So why haven't they done anything about it yet? The last thing that was, what was that on-demand TV service that the BBC were setting up, and it was pushed back.
Oh, that's coming this year though, and I've forgotten the name of it. Oh, bother.
What was this, like an extension to the iPlayer or?
Well, it was for live,
isn't it? Yeah.
Okay. It was, sorry.
Yeah, I thought that the idea was they were going to put their back catalogue on it, and then you could rent them, basically.
As an iTunes competitor.
That's sort of more of a Netflix competitor, I'd imagine. Mm. But, but I mean, I think it's a shame. But it's like so much. It's like the people that, you know, I come from photography, so it's like the people that go into a camera shop, get all the expertise, get the demo, get this, and then go and buy it from Amazon a bit cheaper. The camera shop won't be there in 6 months' time if you don't stop it. Now, this is a good example of a similar thing. I was just reading this morning, I don't know if any of you are interested in the Dirk Gently BBC series. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I really enjoyed it, okay? Now, there's a big piece on the BBC website, so they're obviously trying to make a point to the bosses here, that says Stephen Magnan bitterly upset over Axe Dirt Gently, and it's all about, they've said that because there's a freeze on the licence fee, they basically can't make any more of these programmes because there's no money around. Now, there's a good example of the first shots across the bow of this sort of behaviour. All that happened, if the BBC's revenue does come down dramatically, either two things. Either they'll have to pull things from Netflix, etc., and not allow them to have it, or they'll have to carry on cutting back. You know, this is a decision that needs to be made, and I think in the long run, for the purposes of us as consumers, we need the BBC to be making good programming and not taking a short-term view. So potentially, I'd say I'd prefer BBC to pull it from Netflix, only have the availability on something like the iPlayer, which is you know, how long can you have it for, a month or something? And then continue.
That's 30 days.
Continue to then produce this programming. I would have said this thing on the BBC, as it's on their own site, I would have said this is a way of just trying to make a point and using their own site to make a point. I don't think there's anyone at the BBC that's in disagreement that they want to make more Dirk Gently. They just want to get it out there as to using this as a good excuse why we can't, and we want our license fee to be raised again. That's what this is about. But I really do think you've got to be careful, because of, as a business, the BBC is purely funded on either license fee or anything else they can generate on the back of it. Or you want adverts. You know, so you've got to be really, really careful, because to take away something that we're all fairly proud of, unless we're, you know, real stick in the mud, I think we've got to be careful. I really do.
I would just like the BBC to cut down some of its channels. I don't see why we need a BBC 3 and a BBC 4. And
I'll tell you what, change BBC 4's name and just get rid of BBC 3 altogether. I'm sick of the stuff that's on there, and put Family Guy on BBC 2.
Well, I am a BBC lover. I would say BBC 3 is a little bit too avant-garde and a bit trendy, but BBC 4 is a really worthwhile channel. You know what they should do if they're going to have it? Have a BBC 3, but be it internet streamed only.
Yeah. Well, ITV do that with one of their channels, don't they? It's like they have ITV 5, which is web only, where they sometimes put live sports.
Yeah.
So that sort of same idea, you know, they also throw the advertising in, you know, little 30-second pre-roll or whatever.
What kind of live sports are they putting on ITV5? Are they restricting it to just that? I was going to say, is it going to be live?
Well, the last example was they usually have a day of touring cars on ITV4, but they cut it to go to the tennis in France. So they said, oh, here it is, it's continuing on the website, or you can watch the highlights later.
Well, I suppose the BBC have got it because they've got Red Button.
Yeah.
Which is, I suppose, the equivalent, isn't it, really?
Exactly, yeah. It's that kind of thing. They just couldn't get that extra little channel on the actual Freeview spectrum.
Okay. So the UK is to repeal SOPA-like site blocking, says CNET. Zach Whitaker writes, the UK government has said it is to abandon legislative plans to block copyright infringing websites. These proposals reminiscent of the draft Stop Online Piracy, or SOPA, bill put before the US House of Representatives late last year. The two sections that are being removed are Section 12, which allows the government to seek a court order against any location on the internet deemed to facilitate or actively infringing copyright. And there's plenty of those around. And Section 18 sets out the approvals process the government must go through to get such orders granted. So, is everyone breathing a sigh of relief, or are we just waiting for the next SOPA-like thing to come around?
No, because they realise that these two acts aren't necessary, because they've already got laws in place that actually...
They're just not using them properly.
...function, exactly. Yeah. And that's why... you'll say the case in question was the MPAA, the Motion Picture Association of America, brought forward a block. They put in a block request for Newsbins 2 to make BT take Newsbins 2 offline. So if you were a customer of BT, you could not get to this site. And once that went through, then anyone else can do the same, which is why the Pirate Bay has vanished from lots of other UK ISP providers, you know, connectivity, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so all they've done is these two laws, they don't necessarily... Now, what they're saying as well, the good thing about this is it's a lot easier if another judge comes along and says, oh, no, I'm going to overturn this, then everyone gets access back to these sites again. And apparently that's a lot easier to accomplish than having an Acts of Parliament reversed. So what it means is basically no longer the UK has full access to the internet.
Yeah, but what it is, basically, again, is censorship by economics.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got enough money, e.g. you're a big film company or you know, a collaboration of film companies, you can say, you know what, we'll just make a demand against people because we've got enough money to keep it in court for the next 10 years. You know, well, the reason they're getting rid of this basically is because it wouldn't stand up against British or European law. That's the reason they got rid of it. It's so much not just this government, all governments. It's government bluster just to look like they're strong and powerful. But when it comes down to it, you know, somebody's made up some idea. They've tested it by their lawyers, and the lawyers have said, you must be joking, mate. There's no way you're going to get away with this. But this will quietly disappear, but whereas you've managed to get the headlines from saying it in the first place. It's just a standard thing that happens. It's a lot more difficult in Europe to get away with it because we've got about five different levels of people that have got to agree. So this is just, I would imagine it's been tested against European standards, and it's just been like, oh, don't be stupid. There's no way you're going to get this through. Stop wasting any more money on it. That's all this is simply, I
think.
Well,
they did get similar stuff in France where they have the three strikes rule and you're off the internet. However, apparently it hasn't actually curbed anything.
Well, yeah, because if you can say what you want, but if it's not actually enforceable by law, all it takes, I mean, governments have got to be particularly careful, because, for instance, if you do bring in a law like this three strikes law, and then you get 100,000 people and you fine them all and all the rest of it, and then one of them takes a class action against you and it turns out that you were wrong, you're in so much stuck. You know, I mean, it doesn't bear considering what sort of trouble you're in. So they've got to be so, so careful. And this is what's happened. They've pushed it and pulled it and pushed it and pulled it, and they've realised that, you know, legally it doesn't stand up. So they've just had to drop it.
Okay. Well, if you do visit one of these copyright infringing websites and are caught, Ofcom wants to charge you £20 to appeal.
Well, that sounds fair, doesn't it? To prove you're innocent, you've just paid £20?
Guilty until you cough up the cash, in other words.
Sounds fine to me. I couldn't see why anyone would have an issue with this.
Are you all right, mate?
Either way, you're paying.
Sorry, Tone, you were going to say something there.
Yeah, it just seems a way of, you know, making sure either way, even if someone's innocent, they're still getting something out of, you know, whether that goes to, you know, stays with Ofcom or whether that goes on to, you know, the claimants in the case. I don't know, but...
Yeah, good point. If you're... Sorry, Tone. So if you've proven you are innocent, do you get this £20 back?
You do.
That's all right.
You do. Oh. I read. You do actually get your money back. So it's kind of a... I think it's a bit like a...
Get out of jail free card.
No, it's not a gas.
Get into jail free card.
Get into jail free, yeah.
No, get into jail for £20 card.
Yeah, it's a deposit. So if you lose, if in fact you have been found to be, you know, taking copyright infringing material, then you lose your £20.
It's quite interesting because if you're paying the judge, jury, and executioner £20 to not only accuse you, but then decide whether their accusation is baseless or not. Does it stink?
Mm.
Now, how are they doing? I still have problems how they're doing this, because the only way I can see they're monitoring this is IP addresses.
Yeah, but this is the problem with all of this stuff around copyright infringement, because a person is not an IP address. Lots of people, one router has an IP address. Mm. And who knows how many people can connect to that? So if you've got an open Wi-Fi port, someone can log in and be downloading loads of stuff.
Well, I went to the CAF this morning, just before the show,
and you downloaded lots of copyright infringement material.
And I left open the scanner, the Wi-Fi thing on setting on the iPhone, and so it picks up surrounding like SSIDs, you know, surrounding networks, and I found about 10. That were totally unprotected.
Yeah.
I mean, another example I can think of is what about the networks that are coming on in public transport? Like you've got the Wi-Fi on the tube or on the train, you know, the planes.
Well,
are they going to be sending, you know, these demands to the transport company and saying, oh, you need to pay £20 to prove that it was one of your passengers, not you?
Well, I would hope those ones. I think those ones are going to be managed, but it's the ones in people's homes that they've got no clue. Some guys turned up, installed it for them, and buggered off again.
Mm.
They have no idea they're wide open.
Well, one thing about the last few routers I've bought, they've actually had a password, you know, default password already built in.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, called change me normally, isn't it?
Well, yeah, no.
Password 123.
Now the last one, it actually said, you know, it's like, oh, here's a sticker on the box. This is your unique code. You know, this is only a Belkin one, so. Yeah, I don't know whether
that's... There's lots of reasons why you need to leave a network open. I've had to do it from time to time because you get people coming in with older hardware and various things. And then what do you do? You either set up a guest account which has got a lower grade of security on it so their older system can do it and various bits and pieces. And to be honest, the easiest way around it is I log in, I turn all the security off while they are here and they're playing around and doing their thing. And if I remember, I turn it back on again. A few years ago, there was a case in Germany, and somebody that, you know, they were doing a similar thing saying, you know, we've got proof that you downloaded a load of stuff. And then you got all these other people saying, no, we leave our networks open. And what had happened is the German courts, first of all, they said, no, that's not good enough. You have to be responsible for anyone using it. Then that was challenged and it was then deemed that, you know, how can you be responsible? It's up to you whether you have it open again. And then the German government were trying to put through an act of their parliament to basically say, no, if you've got an open network, you are culpable on the grounds that you're allowing a crime to be committed. I don't know where it got left, which is basically the same thing that's going to happen here. I think there is a European ruling on it, but for my life, I can't remember what the ruling was. But, you know, it's like so many of these things. The governments want everyone else to take responsibility for something that should necessarily be theirs. So what they've done, they've said, okay, look, we can't actually get the end operator to be responsible for if somebody else hacks into their system or has got access to their system. So we'll blame the IP providers. And they're saying, no, how can we be responsible for what someone else has done? It's all about nobody wanting to police the system properly. So what you do, you keep passing the buck to the end of the line. Nothing can ever get done, but at least this way you can look like you're doing it. Because this three strikes and you're out. Yeah. You know, it's nonsense. There's so many people that I give access to my network because they come into this house. How can I say, okay, right, everyone that's ever come into this house and used my network, how do I know if one of them isn't sitting outside at 2 o'clock in the morning with a car and they've actually got my network?
I'm sure you can find a lawyer to draft up a short contract.
Exactly.
Or you, Alex.
But, you know, am I supposed to change my login details every week just in case somebody that I used to get on with now I don't know that's actually decided to turn criminal is using my network? It's all such a load of nonsense. And why should I be responsible for someone else's illegality?
But if you leave your Wi-Fi open,
yeah,
isn't that the same as leaving your front door open?
That was the argument they were using. But if you leave your front door open, my insurance company might not pay out, but it's still theft. It's not breaking an entry, but it's still theft. There is a different crime. It's stealing the use of my bandwidth. So maybe it's not breaking into my bandwidth, but it's still stealing it.
What one thing as well is like you will get some users that have their network open. And, you know, they may be naive and they don't realise that this kind of thing, you know, somebody else may be able to connect.
Well, that's something they got round with years ago because they changed the law quite a few years ago to say ignorance of the law is no defence.
Right.
So basically, they can make the law whatever they like, even if they don't bother telling anyone that they've changed it.
Yeah.
And you can still be prosecuted. There's loads and loads of reasons why at some point or other you leave your network open or you give a third party access to your network. If I changed a password on here, which I have done recently because I was trying to test something, I must have 20 or 30 things that needed to be reprogrammed with a different password. That's myself. Everyone that ever comes into my house, they've all got an iPhone, they've all got something. Let's say they say, look, would you mind if I jump onto your network so I can just check my emails because the 3G here is terrible? You know, I mean, what am I going to say? No, I'm sorry, because in a year's time, you might decide you don't like me anymore and start downloading illegal films, and I might get in trouble for it. That's
what
never
I do.
Happen, is it?
That's what I do. I don't let anyone onto the Wi-Fi in my house.
Yeah, but that's why you
get no visitors.
No friends.
That's why I get no visitors. I have no friends.
I mean, for instance, Carl's a good example. Carl came around here.
Carl's a good example of someone with no friends.
No, what I'm saying.
Oh, I've got at least one.
Carl's very technically minded, and he came around here and he wants to show me something that we've been working on or something like that. He pulls out his iPad or whatever it is and he's like, can I jump onto your network so I can show you this? Of course you can. You know, but, you know, just because Carl's a decent guy doesn't mean everybody else is, or it doesn't mean that somebody might not steal Carl's laptop, which has remembered my password. There's so many loopholes that it's just not policeable unless you're unreasonable.
Mm. Right, moving on.
Sorry.
UK regulators say ISPs must be piracy watchdogs. Just adding even more onto the list of things that ISPs have got to do.
It's all doom and gloom this week, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's this week in piracy. The nation's communications the nation's communications regulator Ofcom today rolled out a draft code demanding ISPs watch out for piracy, record how many warnings are given to suspected offenders, and after three notices, remove violators.
Do you know, I remember when the internet was a fantastic place, free and open, and you could do whatever you want pretty much if you wanted. And it was a community of sharing and exchanging ideas. And now they just seem to want to lock it down.
And then the corporate world noticed.
Scary, yes.
Yeah. So, will this be a race to find out which ISP has the most lax attitude towards keeping an eye on this? Or is this just going to stop people pirating?
Who's going to pay for this? Who's going to pay? I just want to know who's going to pay for all the extra work they'll have to do. Is it going to
be?
We are. There you go. Yeah.
Well, 20 quid a go will cover a lot of it.
Yeah.
You know, okay, let's. I really would like to know what the percentages are for people who are supposedly copying, who are infringing on copyright stuff, because I'm pretty damn sure it's a very small percentage. Hmm. And they never supply these details, mainly because they have no clue themselves.
Yeah. It seems to be because of other services that are legal that have come out. It that's brought down the piracy. It's got to have. Hmm. Even iTunes, you know, gave piracy a kick in the start, you know, because it offered the music and it was cheaper than going and buying a CD. You know, and you had it there, you know.
Hmm.
You know, and now they're doing movies as well and things like that. You know, it's got to have brought the numbers right down.
It's just I just feel that these media providers are just so annoyed at the internet. They just want to kill it. They want to go back to early 80s or whenever before the internet came along, and they just want to turn back time and just forget this whole period ever happened.
Yeah. Well, while they continue to make, you know, record-breaking movies at times.
Well, they shouldn't exploit the technology if they don't want the technology to work against them. Look, if you don't want, if you don't want to sell your stuff on the internet, then don't make it a format that can be easily be copied and sent along the internet. I mean, it's as simple as that. You make a digital format, whether it even be on a DVD or not. You know, the whole thing is absolutely bordering on ridiculous. They look at figures. They say, oh, look, well, we've made a film and we've sold 100 million downloads. I don't know what they'd do. Probably 100 rather than 100 million. And they say, but it's been pirated 700,000 times. So that's 700,000 times, you know, the income that we should have had. No, it doesn't work like that. That's complete and utter rubbish. It's the people that are pirated, it will not be paying anyway, right? So if you're that bothered, then, you know, bring down the price, sell it only on DVD, because if someone actually does something and rips a DVD or copies a DVD, then it's a physical thing and you've got more right to go after them. And the whole thing is so damn annoying. It's the ignorance, if you like. It's the ignorance of the managing directors or whatever fancy name they give themselves these days of these companies. You know, you can't... It's like suing the car company because somebody sped. It's complete nonsense.
It's also that they never, you know, they were too slow to take on the technology in the first place, you know, and actually use it to their own advantage.
Well, the formats and the codecs weren't designed by them or made by them. It was some person that sat there and said, I've ripped this DVD. How can I get it to my mate on the other side of the world? I know what. I'll write a way of, you know, digitizing it and squeezing it into a smaller file. They didn't come up with it, but what they do, they exploit it. Basically, what they've done is they've exploited what the people they're having a go at created in the first place. Napster came along, and then after Napster gets shut down for doing something wrong, you've got all these other sites which are Napster-like, not mentioning anyone in particular, but they're all Napster-like. The whole process is exactly the same. It's just they've put a paywall in front of it. Don't steal the technology and then complain about the technology you've stolen.
See, I can fully understand their gripes, but they've had years and years to jump on board. They've got a system now that they didn't have to create, but they can use, that can share their stuff in a heartbeat, virtually, to the entire planet. And they don't use it. They want to lock it down. They want to shut it down. They want to be in the age of scarceness, and that doesn't exist anymore.
Well, if you want to go and see a video about what Rob Reed calls copyright math, it's hilarious. I highly recommend it. Go to YouTube and search for Rob Reed copyright math. It's a TED talk, and it will lighten your spirits.
Are you allowed to put rude comments?
I wouldn't. Well, you won't want to put a rude comment, you see.
No, but
you'll love it. You really will enjoy it.
He'll do it anyway, you know.
Yeah.
I tell you, I got a horrible feeling, Russ, that this subject that we've been discussing mainly today is we're going to come back to again and again and again.
Well, each time I'm going to suggest you watch that Rob Reed video because it will cheer you up every single time.
It's going to be in a lot of show notes.
We should just have it as a permanent link.
Yeah, it just highlights the stupidity in the industry. You know, because all of these people have watched this pirated film. Then that means we've lost, you know, $10,000 per downloader.
Yeah.
All right.
What they do miss is that sometimes people, you know, especially in the early days when it was songs, you know, people would download them and then go and buy the CD. You know, if they decided, oh, they like it.
Oh, Russ, have you got a happier story for us?
I certainly have. That's only because you can see the document. Right, I'm going to cheer you up with a bit of Star Trek news, or at least a rumor. Star Trek Next Generation Season 2 Blu-ray to include extended episode, maybe. This news comes after a tweet from the episode's writer, Melinda Snodgrass. It hit the web a few days ago. Snodgrass said she was dropping off an extended cut of an episode that would be on the DVD. This is Measure of a Man, where Riker has to explain why Data is not alive, and Picard has to defend Data. Who is excited about the Star Trek: The Next Generation Season 1 Blu-ray starting, which is going to be coming out in July? Who's going to buy that?
Now, see, this is the exact kind of thing that might make me actually buy a Blu-ray player. You know, might make me think, oh, it's worth, you know, getting. Because no, I haven't got one yet.
No? What about you, Carl? Are you excited about this?
I'm excited, but my own self-imposed ban on physical media, I can't have this until it gets on one of the streaming networks.
Well, you might be in luck, because I think the original, you know, they rescanned all of the original series into high definition, and it really does look good, even though it was filmed on old 16mm back in the 60s. I think that's available on Netflix streaming in the States. I don't know when it's going to come over here. So you may start to see Next Generation in high definition over here. You never know.
I know when I went to Florida a few weeks back, I was able to watch the original Star Trek in the updated format with new graphics, new special effects and everything like that. And
what
cleaned
did you think?
Up. Oh, it was brilliant. I went back and watched a few classic episodes and I thought, why haven't we got this in the UK yet?
I think they've done a really good job with the original series stuff, because they've replaced all of those old model shots, which, to be totally honest, did look a bit They did look a bit.
Well, that's the thing. They've done a kind of mix, haven't they? It's like they've updated where it needed to be updated, but then there's some shots where it is the same, or they've replicated it in such fine detail.
Yeah. Well, it's
they can barely tell. You know.
They haven't inserted.
George Lucas.
I was just about to say they haven't gone the Star Wars route. They've said, right, what's in this frame? Right, let's recreate this with CGI, and it looks pretty much exactly the same.
And they didn't do what they did with Red Dwarf either, which was just horrible.
Oh,
remastered. Yeah.
I'll say you those old.
I actually threw those away.
Really?
Yeah, I was so utterly annoyed by the whole thing. I bought them thinking, oh, that'd be interesting. And it was just, what is this crap?
Do you want to tell us what it was, if anyone's not aware, when we say the Red Dwarf things?
It was just CGI. It was so obvious, and they changed the look of pretty much everything. It was any model shots, any shots of the outside of the ship. You know,
The computer panels, they put overlays on all the old computer panels.
Yes, they did as well, yeah.
And they were appalling. Yeah. But, you know, you're taking a comedy that was funny, and then you put all this really, this stuff that visually distracted you.
Yeah. And also, there were extra shots of the ships in there where they cut out a good line from the dialogue to fit that
in. Yeah, they did. They actually, added bits occasionally as well.
So they out George Lucas then? those original model shots on Red Dwarf, I always thought they were really good.
They were. Yeah. I always thought they were reminiscent like Doctor Who days. And
well, they look better than Doctor Who, especially the series. I think was it Series 7 where they were just on Starbug.
Yeah.
I thought even the series after that. Where they did, there was a ship chase going through a kind of an ice planet. Even though you can see the slight ripples in the curtain in the background, it really did look good. And now they've replaced it all with CGI.
Whereas in the new series that they've been filming of Red Dwarf, they've gone back to more models, but touching it with CGI. So there will be a CGI element, but it will be. You know, the models are still there as well, which I think is a brilliant move.
But can you still get classic Red Dwarf?
Yes.
That's right.
The versions on Netflix are the originals.
Yes.
Yeah. I've got the full set of DVDs of the originals. Yeah, when they did that, started releasing them with the Smegups and all that.
Well, I've got them on VHS.
Yeah.
I have those as well.
I gave all my VHS away. Now, I mean, again, I sound like old, but I think sometimes you might even agree with me. This, you know, if something was made at a time and a space in time, as in the genre was moving on and this was the early stages of the genre, it's like taking a Hitchcock. It's like taking a black and white Hitchcock and colorizing it and put a load of CGI in it. No, keep away. Leave it alone. This was a genius's idea of what the future would hold and the technology available at that time to show it. That's what I want to see. I want to see it as in a historical context of filmmaking, not just the fact that you can now take it away and, you know, you can add a character if you want. You could stick someone else in it and you'd probably do it seamlessly and no one would notice. Well, they would notice, but you wouldn't physically notice. The whole point is this got a historical context, not only is in... you know, what the story is, but what was made, how it was made, how it was acted. You know, and if you want to do something different, then remake it. Don't copy it, remake it. This could be, I don't know what we're talking about, Star Trek or Red Wolf, whatever it is. Start from the beginning because of what it had is what it was, and it's got a historical context, and that's part of the enjoyment.
Yeah, and they actually did that with Captain Scarlet. And they had Gerry Anderson involved in that, and you know, but they made a fully CGI version. It was, you know, they basically updated it. It was some of the same characters, but they did give it a different plot slightly.
Was it any good?
It was all right, yeah. Sadly, it was put on kids' TV time slots, so it kind of buried.
What they're doing with the next generation Blu-ray stuff is they're taking all the original negatives, including the effect shots, and re-scanning them. I think they're probably re-scanning them in 4K, and then they're recompositing all the effects. So it's exactly what you had in the original when it was originally aired and put on VHS and that kind of stuff. But it's just crisper and it's being cleaned up.
Can I just say, Star Trek Next Generation Season 1 Blu-ray Ray, region free, so it's not locked to any region. They're saying on Amazon, £51, released July 23rd, 2012.
Yeah, but how much were the DVDs when they originally came out? They were 50 quid
forget,
each.
Forget DVDs. I remember buying these on VHS, two episodes of tape, and I bought every single one.
And they were like £15 a time, something like that.
Have you got a photograph of that?
I really wish I had, because it used to make up an image.
It did.
No, I haven't.
The DS9 ones made up an image, didn't they?
They all did. Yeah. If you put everything in a row, it merged from one image to another image.
It was so many videos, it was one-to-one scale.
It could have well been the length of the Enterprise.
Yeah. they did that with one of the collections of the films on DVD as well, didn't they?
Yeah. For such a great... Because I know... Like Missy's a fan, like she's adamant. Star Trek, the original, is the pièce de résistance, so to speak. But TNG was my one, and
it's the one you grew up with.
Yeah, it's just a shame it ended on such a bum movie. But there you go.
I go between The Next Generation and DS9. I think DS9 has. I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do if they do a Blu-ray transfer of DS9, because I think that will look incredible. Really looking forward to all of this high def content coming soon for £50 to a Blu-ray player near you. This show and all the other shows on the network wouldn't happen without the support of UK2.net. They absorb all the bandwidth costs for all the shows, and they are fantastic. If you want to support them, they've got some voucher codes for you. They've got British Tech DNS, will give you free DNS for up to 2 years on your domains. British Tech Domains gives you 20% off any domain registration. British Tech VPN gives you 50% off the first month of VPN. And British Tech Server will give you £50 off any gigabit server on any contract length. And that's an online deal only, so you can't get that over the phone. And British Tech VPS, you get the first month free when purchasing entry-level VPS. When you go and use those codes, make sure you use the click through on the British Tech Network website so that we know they sent you. I use them for a number of my clients for my day job, and they are absolutely rock solid. Love them. We couldn't do this without them, so please go and support them. Right. Now, Carl has a little apology to make.
Yes, my pick for what to watch last week. I said Lost in La Mancha. Or whatever it was. And I said it was on Netflix. It was actually on Love Film. Sorry about that. But we are doing our, you know, errata. We are fixing the problems as we go through.
Yeah, we're fixing the problems as we go.
We're fixing the problem,
yep.
Carl.
And then we'll be round with hammers soon.
Shut up, you. Shut up, all of you.
Yeah. Right. Now, there's a story behind this next thing. What was it, Alex? You said earlier.
Yeah, so we were just discussing the section, and we were sort of saying that, you know, we want to give some, you know, what we think are good films or good TV programs and everything. And we thought maybe each week we'll have a different scenario, if you like, as to what basis we will give our recommendations on. And so we thought, well, you know, to start off with, you've got to give your recommendations based on something really factual. And the factual recommendation will be an alien has just landed on the planet. And we've got to say, okay, right, here's two films that we think, go and have a watch, and that'll explain something about human nature and maybe films, etc. So, you know, so this week we're going to just have two films, programs, whatever we want from each of us for an alien that's just landed on the planet.
Okay, Alex, what did you pick?
Right, well, I picked two very different films. I picked A Beautiful Mind, which is a 2001 film. Who's in it? Russell Crowe, Ed Harris, Jennifer Connelly. Basically, it's a mathematician, very highly educated. I think he was a lecturer in a university, and he was called in by the government to help do some cryptography and various secret agent-y type of stuff. And I won't give too much away, but it's the effect it had on him psychologically, and the inability for him to be able to tell from what is real and what is not real. And it's a very good psychological drama, which to me shows intelligence and maybe also the downside of having too much intelligence. So I would have said that's a good story to give an alien an insight into the way the human mind actually works. It's also very well acted, and it's the first film I ever saw with Russell Crowe where my opinion of him wasn't completely negative. And secondly, just because I want the aliens to feel good too, I think they should watch It's a Wonderful Life. Apart from anything else, Donna Reed is so beautiful that, you know, it's the best of what we do. Jimmy Stewart, what a wonderful guy. Calm, pleasant, nice. It shows you that, you know, even if you want things in life, just because you think that things you want are right for you, maybe they're not. Maybe what you got is exactly what you need, and be a bit more appreciative of what you've got. It's humorous, it's lovely, it's beautifully acted. By the time you finish, you're gonna feel good about yourself and everyone else you know, and that's never a bad thing.
Just make sure you watch it in its entirety.
Yeah, don't finish halfway through and decide you've had enough of living. It does get better, I promise you.
That's two good picks. I'll have to watch both. I haven't seen A Beautiful Mind. I still haven't seen It's a Wonderful Life. So those are two things that I need to watch. And so do the aliens. Carl.
Okay, well, I'm just going to go with my two favourite films of all time because I thought, what the hell? Let's share these. First up, The Godfather, 1972. What can you say? Your ultimate bloke movie. If you want to show an alien how to set up a business,
a business
and take control of all your competitors, just watch The Godfather. All you need to know about advanced management, I would say, is in that film.
As watched by Apple.
And the second one is obviously Star Wars, and I do mean the original one, where Han shot first.
That's great.
None of this Credo shooting first nonsense. And it's just an entertaining film off into a far-off land, far-off galaxy, many, you know, a long time ago. And it's just good fun, entertainment, and, again, like I say, the original one before you start messing with it.
Tone?
Yep. My first pick was Independence Day.
Because the aliens need a blueprint.
Yeah, it'll be a subtle message, you know, because they might think it's a documentary. But no, and then my second pick was Blues Brothers, to show a sort of lighter side. You know, it's got a little bit of everything. You know, they might even like the car crashes at the end. If nothing else.
Oh, they might like the music.
Yeah, that's...
The music is good.
Yeah.
Soundtrack's fantastic on that film, I love it.
Oh, God, yes.
And mine, first one, In the Loop. So that they can, so that we can show them exactly what extremes we will go to go to war, and be they'll be very
sort of like Independence Day then.
Sort of. It's the prequel to Independence Day.
Yeah, it's a different take on it. Yeah.
And the second one is Prometheus. So perhaps they can explain to us what the hell that all meant.
Oh, you told us last week you knew what it meant.
I do know what it means. I'm just not telling you, and I loved it.
It's because he's got an alien in his cupboard who explained it all to him.
Yeah. Before it implanted him. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So if anybody has any other suggestions, they can tweet us or send us an email to, what is it, britishtechnews@gmail.com?
British Tech Network, isn't it?
British Tech Network. Try British Tech Network and British Tech News.
It should be on the site somewhere. It keeps changing.
It'll be on the site. It'll be on the site. Just make sure you put media somewhere in the subject line so that we know to get hold of it. Right. What's happening on Friday, Carl?
I don't know. What's happening? Oh, yes. A little thing in Birmingham called The Bash. where a group of people are all meeting up and we're going to have a jolly fun old day. Mr. Ewan Rankin has invited us all and we're going to podcast all day long, drink beer all day long, eat a lovely pig, which is very mercilessly he's laid down its life so we can enjoy it. And unless you're a vegetarian, in which case you're getting salad. And we're going to party into the wee hours or until Ewan's neighbours tell us all to sod off.
Okay.
Like we're going to listen to them.
If you want to come, there's still some tickets available, but they're going fast. If you go to our main website, which is obviously britishtechnetwork.com, there's a banner at the very top there. Just click through, buy yourself a ticket. It's £20 charge for a ticket, but as long as you bring your ticket with you, you will get your money back. But you have to bring your ticket with you.
There's also an application for the iPhone. For Eventbrite, isn't there?
That's right. I think it puts a code, gives you your QR code, and another iPhone can then scan it, and you get added or checked off the list.
I've got the same on Android, so yes, I can confirm.
There's an Android app as well. Fantastic.
Are we going to have to prove our DNA credentials or something?
No, we've got a retina scanner.
No, it's a blood sample, Alex.
Yeah. Okay. And a urine sample as well, but yeah.
Bring all your samples, your driving license, and...
Yeah. If your blood alcohol,
you're literally giving everything to the network,
and a letter from your mother.
Yeah. If your blood alcohol level isn't above a certain level, you can't come in.
Right. Okay. Right. That's it for this show, such as it is. Right. Where can we find you, Alex?
Alex G Fox on Twitter.
Excellent. Tone, where can we get you?
Tone_720 on Twitter.
And there's going to be a new F1 show after the British Grand Prix next week.
Yeah, I think we're even doing a little preview on the Bash Day as well.
Fantastic, fantastic. And Carl.
You can get me on Twitter at Claw0101, or you can also get me on Worlds Apart with Missy, or the Apps Chat show, which when it comes out, when I find developers that want to chat with me.
Used to be the photo show, but he doesn't bother turning up anymore.
My work's not letting me out in time. They're rascals, I tell you.
You're doing the photo show
this Friday.
Oh yeah, I have to.
You're doing it on the Bash, aren't you?
Yeah, because work's got nothing to do with it. I booked the day off.
Great stuff. Great stuff. And you can find me at SF Drummer on Twitter and take a look at www.sfdrummer.com. I finally bought that domain name.
Whee!
Right. That's thank you. Thank you for that. Right, that's all from us. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. We'll see you then. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.